him standing at the door. My lover will be coming home no more. Happily ever after is the dream of any schoolgirl, finding a prince charming of her own. But now I cry alone, sifting through the wreckage that is washed upon the shore.
America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, hey, hey. So glad to be with you this afternoon. Yes, indeed. You are listening to the Guy James Show this afternoon, and we're going to have a good show for you today. Lots coming up here. Once I can get these volumes straightened out, my goodness, why isn't everything up in there? Maybe that's a little better. Looking forward to a great show today. We're going to have Brad Friedman along a little bit later, along about the 4 o'clock hour. And, of course, Brad being one of the foremost experts on the black box voting machines across the country and vote fraud, we'll be talking to him about that situation and see just how things went in some of the primaries yesterday. Very interesting primaries yesterday, a lot of places. Of course, we know by now that Mr. Blackwell won his primary up in Ohio in the governor's primary up there. Of course, he was expected to. And it'll be interesting to see how that whole race turns out with Blackwell. We'll talk about that a little later on in the show today. And, of course, I have to mention that Bob Ney in Ohio, up in, what is it, the 18th district, I believe it is, in southern Ohio, he got 68% of the vote yesterday. And the man's about to be indicted, listed as maybe, what, the third most corrupt criminal in Washington, D.C., and 68% of the people in his district voted to put him back up for election again in the primary. Oh, well, if you live in the 18th district in Ohio, I'm sorry, but one can only wonder what would have happened if, say, Tim McVeigh or Al Capone had been on the ballot there. But then let's not kid ourselves here. As a former Ohioan, I can tell you the area Ney is from isn't exactly known for its intellectual capacity. Not condemning everybody there, you understand, but I think you can understand that when one looks at the results from yesterday and see that Ney gets 68% of the vote in his district when he is, oh, my God, about as corrupt as a person could get in Washington, D.C., and I think you're going to find out some terrible, terrible things in the upcoming indictment about Bob Ney. And yet the people of his district, the Republicans in his district, have faith in good old Bob Ney. Well, Bobby boy, I don't think you'll be sitting in the halls of Congress very long. Not very long at all. I think you're going to be sitting someplace else cooling your heels. It'll take a little while, but they will get him there sooner or later. How's everything where you're at today? Huh? Are you having a good day? I hope so. Much to talk about on the program today, and hopefully we'll get around to all of it. I do want to thank you for all the listener comments that I got yesterday. My word, you must have liked yesterday's show for some reason or another. And I got an interesting comment. Gosh, all of a sudden I see who, can't remember who sent this. I think it's a guy who calls himself JC Racer. He was talking about Colbert. Says it was like Sunday's show avoided showing the Colbert part like a plague and kept re-showing the Bush double bit. From my point of view, he still looked uncomfortable even doing that bit with the double, which shows me he's not even comfortable being himself. And as for Colbert, the only thing I worry about is our friends on the right do what they do best, bitch, moan, whine, threaten, and flood mailboxes until Comedy Central might pull the Colbert Report and replace it with some good old reruns of Reno 9/11. Guy, I have a question about a good friend of yours, and he means that in jest. One Mr. Tony Snow, the new Meister of misinformation, I mean press secretary, will he be getting two paychecks, or will Karl Rove make up the last 5 years in one large sum? Well, now that is a good question. What will happen in that situation? Will Snow, given up a huge amount of money to make, what was it we looked up on Monday, $157,000 a year? Yeah, right, he's going to do that. Sure, he's going to do that. He's going to give up $157,000 a year to be press secretary. Mm-hmm, happens every day, right? And I found an interesting story. Probably a lot of you saw this. I don't know how far it got around, but Cheney was rebuking Russia on democracy. It's odd to me that Cheney would speak to anybody about anything anymore. He wants Russia to stop using energy supplies for what he calls blackmail. Reuters, this is from Reuters. U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney, in one of the Bush administration's sharpest rebukes to Moscow, accused Russia on Thursday of backsliding on democracy and urged it to stop using energy supplies for blackmail. First of all, for Cheney or Bush to claim that Russia is backsliding on democracy after this Patriot Act we just passed is absolutely laughable, and I'm sure the Ruskies are having a good old laugh over that one. He went on to say, Russia has a choice to make, Cheney told Baltic and Black Sea leaders at a summit in Vilnius, calling on Moscow to return to democratic reform at a time of increasingly chilly relations between the United States and Russia. Well, now I wonder who has made those relations so chilly. Could it be the Bush administration, who may as well board up the State Department and use it for book storage or something? We don't need a State Department. Do you think we need a State Department? I don't think so. Not now. We've needed one in every other administration in history, back since Ben Franklin's time. But we most certainly don't need a State Department now. We had a State Department, Secretary of State in Colin Powell, who had been completely neutered by the Bush administration. He was Secretary of State in name only. He was allowed none of the latitude a normal Secretary of State gets. We've got Condi Rice as Secretary of State now. And as our guest yesterday pointed out, she may have the ear of the president, but he doesn't give a good you-know-what about what she says to him. We have no diplomacy. We have no diplomacy at all. Remember when we went out looking for partners in the Iraq War? How many did we get and who did we get? What a ragtag bunch we got. And they were pretty much blackmailed into it, all of them, or they would cut off their few million dollars of foreign aid that they get from us. Anyway, going on in this story about Cheney talking about the Russians restricting democratic rights, and warned President Vladimir Putin, warned him that some of Moscow's actions could hurt relations with other countries. Bush told leaders of the post-communist nations with a history of domination by the former Soviet Union, "None of us believes that Russia is fated to become an enemy." Well, isn't it good to know that Bush and Cheney are out scaring the Russians again? Very nice. Nice job, fellows. And, of course, we saw again yesterday another round of polls have come out. And I hate admitting it every month. I do. I hate it, but I'm man enough to do it. I was wrong. I said he couldn't go any lower. He did. But really, when you stop and think about it, anyone want to tell me why President Doofus would even care about any old popularity poll right now? I mean, he's already been selected. And, you know, there's nothing anybody's going to do to get him out of office except impeach him. And that's really not likely, given the House of Representatives is thoroughly gerrymandered Republican. So why would he care that he's almost completely and thoroughly unpopular? Look, local price of gasoline where I live right now is $3.09 a gallon. Maybe higher, lower where you're at, but it's high everywhere. Vice President Halliburton is dancing a jig and giving the finger to the U.S. population and saying, go chaining yourself. That's exactly what these people think. He's got what he wants. Oh, sure, he might not do much governing over the next couple of years, but really, do you think he cares? I don't think so. I don't think so. He never did show that he cared. He never did show at all that he cared. Got up and gave that little speech with the bullhorn on top of the rubble with the firemen there after 9/11, and America looked at him and said, look at this. Isn't this great? Isn't this great? We've got a kind and compassionate president who, after we've suffered this horrible tragedy, he actually gets up and speaks in behalf of the American public like every man and woman in the United States wouldn't have done that. Was nothing more than a photo op, and I guess maybe most people do understand that by now, that that's all it was a photo op. I'm going to talk a little later on today about the nasty, nasty little Watergate thing going on again. It seems to be getting legs, the investigation in Washington. Boy, it's hard to believe that these boys would be getting involved in these little poker parties and prostitutes and limo rides to the Watergate and so forth. And it looks like it's reaching almost to the top. And as I said yesterday, if not to the complete top of the CIA. Not hearing much about it, are we? And I was thinking last night, I get a little weary. I get a little tired of a lot of this, and I know you do too. We talk about partisan politics every day on this program. And I'm a little tired of it being that way. I wish we could get back to the days where Republicans and Democrats got along, and we'd go to Congress every day, go to the halls of the House of Representatives or the Senate, and actually work together across the aisle to try and come across with solutions to the problems of America, and we have many. And as time goes along, as the population grows, we'll have more problems and more problems and more serious problems, and we're running into some very serious problems right now. But I stop and think once in a while, you know, how wonderfully powerful and great this nation could be once again if we could somehow find a way to come together. And not through some tragedy like 9/11, where we came together for really what amounted to the wrong reason, that reason being revenge for the terrible, dastardly act of a terrible enemy, what they did to us. We came together that way. But rather come together in some other far more important ways. If somehow we could abandon the winner-take-all philosophy that we've adopted these past couple of decades. Have you noticed how it's come to that? It's not about policy, and it's not about what's good for America anymore. It's about being on the winning side. It's like a sporting event. If we could just get away from that somehow. If somehow we could come together by understanding that stewardship of the wonderful gifts God's given us, such as our air and our water and our land and the soil we grow our food in and all those things. If somehow we could come together and understand that those are the things that really are important. Not plasma TVs, not huge gas-guzzling cars, not the latest techie gadgets. No, we need to come together and find a way to protect the things God's given us so that we can live and we can prosper on this planet the way it was supposed to be, I think, in the grand scheme of things. And two, I think we need to come together and realize that all of humanity is important, not just us, not just our neighbors, not just those of us who have the same color skin or speak the same language. All people are equally important. We look at all the tragic situations around the world right now, and most especially the one that comes to mind is the horrible scene taking place in Darfur in the Sudan. A horribly tragic situation. Many thousands of people dying. Do those people not deserve the same chance at life as we do? Are they any less than we are? Are those children born of their mothers out in that desert land? Are those children destined to die of starvation? Are they? For those of you that believe in a higher power, are those children destined just to become so much waste on this planet, to be born and to die, live a couple of years and die of starvation and malnutrition, while there's harvest of plenty other places on the planet? Is that the way it's supposed to be? I don't think so. I really don't. I'm ashamed when I see my government and other governments pretty much ignoring that situation. It's a hard thing to watch. It really is a very, very hard thing to watch. But, you know, when you really think about it, what else is there? There's this place we live, this good earth, and there are the people on this earth that we've got to share it with. And shouldn't we find a way to share it peacefully and harmoniously and with the greater good of all of us in mind? I know there are people listening right now. There's one of those bleeding heart liberals that is, can't we just all get along? Yeah. Really, I am. That is what I am. But I think that we do all need to live together on this planet for the greater good of everybody in mind. That's what's important. Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, Communists, Christians, Muslims, Buddhists, Confucius, Atheists, whatever stripes you have. Are we not endowed with the mental capacity to understand that life on this planet can only endure if we learn to get along with one another and share the bounty of the good earth after we have learned to take care of it with the reverence and the care and the awe that it should inspire in every single one of us? I sometimes go to the beach where I live, and I admire the majesty of the sea. And it troubles me that it might become so contaminated so as to be a threat to us instead of the provider of a great bounty of life-sustaining sea life for mankind. I breathe the clean air when I'm at the beach, and I realize that we might only be a very few short years, away from having that air maybe irreversibly contaminated in a way that would cause it to end lives instead of sustaining life. And I've said this many times on this program, I'm a farm boy, and as a farm boy, I've always had a reverence for the land and its ability to give forth the food and the sustenance that we need to sustain life on this earth. But only if we're good stewards of that land and we don't overpollute it with harmful chemicals and such and over-farm it. And our forests all over this planet, they're being plundered. Plundered for money because we waste so much of this valuable resource and we waste so much of all of our resources. I have a feeling that someday archaeologists are going to look back at our society and just shake their heads. When they go through the dumps, like we dig through things today, and they'll dig through our dumps someday where we've our landfills and so forth and see the things that we've thrown away and the waste that we have done, they'll shake their heads and say, what were these people thinking? They will look at these things, they'll see the plastics that have been thrown away, the oil that's been wasted, and say, gee, it's because of these people that we're in such a condition today. I really think we're living in that kind of a society today. We do. We waste so much of our resources. And hopefully the day is not far off when an entire people, maybe as an entire people, we might realize that first and foremost, before we think of making money, before we think of making war, before we think of greed and selfishness, we need to first think of this good earth and the fact that if we don't take care of her, we will all perish, and maybe deservedly so. I'm not the world's greatest environmentalist. I'm not anything of the sort. But it's been brought to mind here the last few days about this oil crisis that we're in right now, and you can't help but think of that. You know, think about that. That we need a much greater conservation. We're hearing so little of that now. You heard one of the experts yesterday that we had on the program talking about. Yes, the price of oil is high. It might well just stay high because we are at peak oil. We need to conserve. We need to find alternative energy. But there are those that you'll talk to that drive the gas-guzzling cars and keep buying the gas-guzzling cars and keep wasting fuel that think it's going to last forever. Maybe not forever, but probably. The attitude that I resent most of all is the attitude of some of these people, well, at least it'll last until I die. That's the one that blows me away. Never mind our kids or our grandkids or their heirs and their heirs beyond them. At least I'll have plenty of oil to drive my Hummer while I'm alive. And that's an avalanche. You know, that's just an attitude that's so prevalent nowadays. It most assuredly is, and I'm sad to see that. I really am, and I know many of you feel just the same way about it. I don't know what's coming. I don't know what's coming with this oil crisis. How we're going to get through it. 309 a gallon right now is putting the hurt on American society. There's no question. I had a conversation maybe an hour ago with someone whose opinion I respect greatly about so many things. And we talked about some of these things. Just don't know what's going to happen. I hope America can realize before it's just too doggone late that we need to get something done about this and something done about it now. Hey, I think we're going to pause for a short break. I want to play a little song that was sent to me, Merle Haggard. And I think you'll like this.
Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it worse. Let the rest of the world help us for change, and let's rebuild America first. Our highways and bridges are falling apart. Who's blessed and who has been cursed? There's things to be done all over the world, but let's rebuild America first. Watching the valley, who's in charge of it all? God bless the army, and God bless our liberty. Here comes the rest of it all. Hey, I'm in a position of backing away. Freedom is stuck in reverse. Let's get out of Iraq, get back on the track. And let's rebuild America first. Once more. Why don't we liberate these United States? We're the ones who need it the most. You think I'm blowing smoke? Boys, it ain't no joke. I make 20 trips a year from coast to coast.
Hey, I like that. Of course, I always like old Merle Haggard anyway. Not a born and raised country music fan, but I do appreciate the masters, and you'd have to say that Merle Haggard, along with Johnny Cash, is definitely one of the masters of country music, with no question about it. Hank Williams in there. And saw that movie, and I know many of you did, and still think they got screwed and should have gotten the Oscar, the Johnny Cash movie. I can't think of the name of it was on, but... Man, it was a good movie. I just thought it was fabulous. I'm really hard on movies. I maybe see one movie every couple of years that I really like. And first of all, I don't see a lot of movies because I know that 9 out of 10 of them won't suit me at all. So I don't watch very many of them. But got dragged to that one, and man, I liked it. I liked it a lot, and it, I always kind of liked old Merle Haggard very much. 866-546-5254. I'd like for you to call me today at 866-546-5254. And by the way, you folks that live in Washington, D.C., you can call our Washington Bureau at 202-370-6153. Or if you're in Phoenix, you can call our Western Bureau at 623-444-5252. And all of those calls are toll-free. The ones in Washington for the D.C. area, the 202 area people, the Phoenix area, the 623 area code number. And the 866-66 number is toll-free for everyone, 866-546-5254. And you can talk on our nickel and add to our horrible phone bill that we have here at the Guy James Show every month. Ah, yes. You know, I was thinking, I heard him talking here locally. They seem to think that locally here in Southwest Florida that we might have a problem. We might be one of the first places in the country to have a problem with the bird flu, since we are, you know, one of those destination areas, a place where people love to come to. I'm sorry, but if you live like in Minot, North Dakota, I've been to Minot, North Dakota, and I like it at Minot, North Dakota. But it's not one of those places where people come flocking in, and I'm sure everybody that lives in Minot's damn glad of that. But here where we live in Southwest Florida, we get the international visitors up the yin-yang, lots of German people here, many, many Italian people. Spoke to someone the other day, and a wonderful Italian lady. and asked her where she lived in Italy. And she said, I live in Napoli. She lives 6 months in Napoli in Italy and 6 months in Naples, Florida. How much better can it get than that? My, my, my. Lots of cases of that. We have a tremendous German population here. Very large German population in a town close to here called Cape Coral. I don't know how that got started years ago, but many, many, many Germans live here. Many, many people from Great Britain live here. A very diverse neighborhood. And glad of it. Glad to hear all those things. But anyway, what I was talking about before I sidetracked myself is this matter of this avian flu, this bird flu that people are talking about. And I think maybe we might be one of the first places to suffer from it. And it sounds like it could be a bad thing. I hope they're not whistling Dixie on this. Estimating as high as 2 million Americans might die of this. And the thing is, I heard the federal government say, well, you know, there really isn't a whole lot we can do about it. We're going to kind of just leave it up to you guys on the local level. Any neocon worth his salt will gladly tell you that the only responsibility the federal government has to the people is to protect them. Well, the folks down on the Gulf Coast don't feel they got their money's worth, and now the feds are telling us that if the bird flu hits, bend over and kiss your ass goodbye, because there isn't much they can do to help us about that either. They say it's a local issue. And I want you to know, if any of you are listening, and I know at least a couple of you are, if my right-wing evangelical friends don't know what I mean, just think of George Bush as the Pontius Pilate of this issue. You ought to get that one, I think, because he pretty much washes his hands of anything to protect the people. Haven't exactly figured out why yet, but he does. So they've said, there you go. If you get the bird flu, good luck. Everybody in Washington, of course, will have that, what is that vaccine? Can't think what it's called now, but they'll all have it. We won't, but they will. And, of course, I'm looking through the news today, and I see that Bush has more than doubled, that's D-O-U-B-L-E-D, doubled the cost of Medicare since he's been in office. The U.S. Medicare plan will ask elderly people to pay 11% more in health insurance premiums for doctor's visits next year. The program's trustees said in a report released yesterday, Medicare intends to charge a monthly premium of $98.20 in 2007, up from $45 in the year 2000. That makes everybody on a fixed income feel real good, does it not? Actually, it was, I got that wrong, premium of $98.20 in 2007, up from $88 this year, and the premium has more than doubled from the $45.50 charged in 2000 when Bush took over. The Senate Democrats yesterday said they wanted to peg premium increases to the Consumer Price Index, a measure used to track economic growth, to slow rate hikes. Now, that might be more fair, in my opinion, because Social Security, to a certain measure anyway, is pegged to the Consumer Price Index as well. So I hope that works out okay. And, of course, we had this big flap. As you can tell, I spent a lot of time looking at the news last night and today. I was so preachy yesterday, I decided we'd talk about a lot of news today. We talked yesterday so much about the national anthem being in Spanish and how so many people are standing up and protesting that and all. And I found this. The I don't think people around the country know this. The fans of the Baltimore, Maryland Major League Baseball team, that would be your Orioles, have adopted the song to show support for the local team, the Baltimore Orioles. Fans sing the song. We're talking about the national anthem now, with a fortissimo emphasis upon the O in the stands. O say does that Star Spangled Banner yet wave, which is a reference to the Orioles' nickname, the O's. The adaptation is made by fans of the Atlanta Braves in Atlanta, Georgia. The last words of the song are changed from Home of the Brave to Home of the Braves. And Wayne Gretzky, on April 18, 1999, professional hockey star Wayne Gretzky played his final NHL game in New York. And in tribute to the retiring superstar, the two singers of the Canadian and American anthems altered the words of their respective songs. The final words of the Canadian national anthem, normally, "O Canada, we stand on guard for thee," became "O Canada, we're going to miss Wayne Gretzky." And the second to last line of the Star Spangled Banner, normally "O'er the land of the free," was changed to "O'er the land of Wayne Gretzky." I'm trying to get across to you that this, and I think you've discovered that by now, with my tongue in cheek, this reverence everybody's all of a sudden had for the words of the national anthem, it ain't necessarily so. It's also a tradition at Dallas Stars hockey games for fans to scream "Stars" twice during a song, "Whose Broad Stripes and Bright Stars." Oh, say does that Star Spangled Banner in honor of their team. The tradition has become so widespread that some opposing teams will not play the national anthem when the Stars are the visiting team. Most notably, the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim. The Atlanta Thrashers fans will shout "Night" during the singing of the national anthem at the line "Gave proof through the night that our flag was still there." Therefore, the Thrashers began playing in Atlanta's then new Phillips Arena in 1999. The minor league Knights played in the Omni Center. "Night" was always yelled during these games, and the tradition has been carried over by those longtime diehard Atlanta hockey fans. So are you getting the message? Was this so much fluff over nothing? I've got another dozen examples that I could bore you with of how that's done all over the country, with people using our Star Spangled Banner to some of the words of it to adapt to their local sports team, and I'll bet you lots of those folks are Republicans who are now screaming about the Hispanic and Latino people wanting to have the Spanish version of the national anthem. You know that there are hypocrites doing that now. I think it's silly. I think it's really silly. Do I want the national anthem sung in English? Yes, I do. I do. I sing it in English. If I knew another language, I would still sing it in English. That's my preference. But if some guy standing next to me is Spanish and wants to sing it in Spanish, go for it. And as I said yesterday, if the guy behind me's had a football game and he's an American now and he's of Portuguese descent, he wants to sing it in Portuguese, that's fine with me. So long as he sings it with love in his heart for America and loves the flag, he can sing it any way you want to. I don't care. So I just brought this all up to emphasize to you the hypocrisy by those on the right of making such a big stink about this Hispanic national anthem, the words to it. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And, of course, we got a report sent to us this morning by one of the news services in Washington, D.C. The Taliban. You remember the Taliban, don't you? You remember them over in Afghanistan? The guys that the Bush administration gave so much money to before we went to war against them because we claimed they were harboring Osama bin Laden. We gave them something like the Bush administration, by the way, gave them like $56 million and then told them, "We're going to attack you." Seemed like the American government's good at doing that. Ask Daddy Bush. Ask Manuel Noriega. Ask, what's his name over in the Philippines? Can't think of his name anymore. America turned against him. America turns against the Shah. We backed a lot of nasty boys. Anyway, the Taliban is back. And building on a winter campaign of suicide bombings and assassination and the knowledge that American troops are leaving, the Taliban appear to be moving their insurgency into a new phase, flooding the rural areas of southern Afghanistan with weapons and men. This report says Lieutenant General Carl Eikenberry met on Thursday with elders of Uragan Province, Afghanistan, urging them to support reform efforts. Each spring, with the arrival of warmer weather, the fighting season here starts up, but the scale of the militants' presence and their sheer brazenness have alarmed Afghans and foreign officials far more than in previous years. Shopkeeper Haji Safula said the Taliban and Al-Qaeda are everywhere, he told the commander of American forces in Afghanistan. It's all right in the city, but if you have to go outside the city, they are everywhere, and the people have to support them. They have no choice. The reason I bring this up is that you all remember that America, as a country, we were united in going into Afghanistan because we went there to hunt down Osama bin Laden. And that's when all the flag waving started. That's when we sent our boys and girls overseas to fight this war in Afghanistan, not knowing at the time we were going to end up in Iraq. But we sent them over there, and we backed them, and we backed Mr. Bush on his decision to do so because America wanted the pound of flesh from Osama bin Laden and his people. And then all of a sudden, we leave. Oh, yeah, we left a few token forces in Afghanistan. But the dogs were pretty much called off the search for Osama bin Laden. And then you heard Mr. Bush say, and I know a lot of you remember this, I don't know where he is. I don't care where he is. I don't think a lot about it nowadays. That was, what, a year or so after he said he's going to smoke him out of his cave, dead or alive? But he changed his mind because he had a chance to go in to Iraq, and he took that chance, and he took most of the forces out of Afghanistan, pretty much left the ones that were there stranded with not enough weapons, not enough soldiers to really do anything, not enough in many cases to even protect themselves against what was left against the Taliban. And what we accomplished in Afghanistan comes down to this. Nothing. We have accomplished nothing in Afghanistan, and I mean nothing. If anything, we're in a minus situation in Afghanistan because the poppy and heroin production is at an all-time high. It has flourished since we went into Afghanistan. And Osama bin Laden is nowhere to be found. And 2,400 and some odd American soldiers have been killed in Iraq because they called off the dogs in Afghanistan, went to Iraq for purely political reasons. And the reason that America backed this military effort in the first place was to go into Afghanistan and pick up Osama bin Laden, and Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice and Douglas Feith and Paul Wolfowitz pretty much turned to the American people and gave them the old middle finger right up in the air. That's what they did to us. That's exactly what they did to us. Like, they care what we think. Oh, yeah. Well, we'll be back to talk a little more about that. And oh, by the way, before we take a break, how many of you saw that interview last evening with the chairman of Exxon? Did any of you fill your car up yesterday? $55, $57, depending on what kind of car you got, even more. I'm one of those that tends to let mine get pretty thirsty before I fill it up. I just can't bear myself to go there any more than I have to, and then I suffer when I do go. Interview with the chairman of Exxon last evening. When asked if they were going to lower prices to help out the American consumer, he said, and I quote, "We're in the business to make as much money as we can for our stockholders, and that's what we're going to do." Don't you love it when a guy is just, you know, just so compassionate for the American people? Ah, yeah, I love it too. Hey, let's take a break. We'll be back in just a couple minutes.
I've always hated Blockbuster.
Target, McDonald's, The Gap, Pepsi, Nike, IBM.
Starbucks, not quite so much. If I'm not boycotting at least three oil companies, I start to feel out of touch. I wouldn't be seen in Nordstrom's or any such. And I hate Walmart. I don't like whips. I don't like chains. I don't go chopping up my neighbor's brains. Don't really like shopping except at the flea market. I hate Walmart. Now you may wonder, what's all this fuss? If you don't like the train, take the bus. Well, I found religion, and just between us, I hate Walmart. If you didn't hear the story, well, here's how it is. Big companies sell below cost, drive mom and pop out of business. Pretty soon all over the land, one big square store, identical brand, and that's why. Stop in on three or four towns, encounter different sights and sounds, different if not unique. Different accent, different smell, different things to buy and sell. Now it's all Taco Bell. I hate Walmart. Roll juice, dip and wine, you drive slow, relax your mind. Never knew what you'd find around the next bend. But now the freeway goes so speedy, go right past the pearly gate. I don't feel human, I feel like freight. Walmart. I like to roam, I like to greet individuals on the street. You always know the one you meet is one of a kind. But more and more, they seem to me reflection of something on TV. When we're all alike, nobody's free. I hate Walmart. I boycott Burger King. I boycott New Gingrich. I boycott everything which I've seen advertised. I used to go out for dinner in the diner. Now they say fast food is finer, but it tastes like it fell out of an airline. It's enough to make you weep. I don't like board games. I don't like brand names. They make inflated claims. That's fair for a bleep. Everyone I meet is a high-tech dealer. Wants to sell me a digital potato peeler. And I don't like Garrison Chemical. He's so white. Turn on my radio dial. Like to hear something new once in a while. But it's the same old crap in a brand new style. It's audio rape. Still I try to pick and choose. I turn the dial, but always lose. They only play the worst rock and roll. And once in a while, if you're lucky, maybe one little rhythm and blues. And that's why. We wore beads and bells, made our own clothes in our own way. Now we all wear uniforms at Hard Rock Cafe. We're in a state of sartorial decay, and that's why I hate Walmart. There's a pretty spot to pave it over. Put a clover leaf over a four-leaf clover. Black paint on the white cliffs of Dover. It never fails. Hope you like this song. Thanks a bunch. Could go on, but I gotta go eat lunch. If you didn't like it, I've got a hunch. You work in sales. Don't grow your own, make your own. Be careful what you own. Develop non-shopping to an art. And whatever you do, don't shop.
says Noam Chomsky. Strong evidence suggests that the Bush administration launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge and tortured, targeted civilians and used illegal weapons. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
We're back. Yeah, Noam Chomsky, be sure and take his advice on that. You know, right before the break, we were talking about this mess in Afghanistan, about how we'd accomplished absolutely nothing there. And somebody just sent me a few minutes ago a report from the U.S. State Department. Remember, I mentioned we don't really have a State Department. We don't need a State Department anymore, do we? Since we're not going to do any kind of diplomacy anymore, why, let's just abandon the thing, get rid of it. Anyway, we got this this report from what's left of the U.S. State Department. It issued its annual country report on terrorism last Friday. It listed numerous state sponsors of terrorism like Iran and groups it considers foreign terrorist organizations like Hamas, Al-Qaeda, and Hezbollah. Conspicuously absent from the list, however, was the Taliban. In an article entitled Terrorism's Dubious A-List, the Nonpartisan Council on Foreign Relations reports that the religious extremist organization has never been listed as a terrorist group by the U.S., Britain, the EU, Canada, Australia, or any of the coalition partners, despite the fact that during its six-year rule in Afghanistan, it provided safe haven for Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, and currently is staging terrorist attack against coalition forces and waging a national campaign of intimidation and fear. But they are not on the United States or the British or the other nations listed, any of the EU, Canada, or Australia. They are not on the list of terrorist organizations. The Taliban isn't. Would, if you're one of the high ups in the State Department from the Bush administration listening to this program right now, there's got to be a lot of them, right? If one of you are listening, could you please call and explain just how this can be? Love to know the answer to that one. I really, really would love to know the answer to that one. Also, one of our good friends sent us a note about the FBI. I was shocked when I read this, and I think many of you will be as well. I bet you didn't know that about a third of the Bureau employees at the FBI still don't even have email accounts as a result of some sort of weird technophobia at FBI. But that's not the only bad habit that the G-men are having trouble breaking right now. As Jeff Stein reports in his must-read CQ Weekly cover story, there's still a willful ignorance about terrorists and their methods, even at the FBI's highest levels. Now, listen to this. Listen to the testimony of Gary M. Bald, the FBI's top counterterrorism and counterintelligence official, in a legal deposition last year, questioned under oath in a whistleblower lawsuit brought by an Arab-American FBI agent. Bald was asked whether he knew the difference between, this is a top FBI agent, mind you, he was asked if he knew the difference between Sunni and Shia, the two strains of Islam at war with each other, as much as with the United States. Bald waved off the question. You don't need subject matter expertise, he said. The subject matter expertise is helpful, but it isn't a prerequisite. It is certainly not what I look for in selecting an official for a position in the counterterrorism program. In other words, he didn't know the answer that of a 1,400-year-long schism over who should lead Islam originating in fierce succession battles after the death of Muhammad in 632 AD, is still being played out between nuclear aspirant the Shiite Iran and the Sunni Saudi Arabia, not to mention the armed factions battling for control of U.S.-occupied Iraq. The FBI. The religious passions that drive the different branches of the Islamic world and the fervor that leads some to violence against the West was not even on his radar screen. Nor could Bald or other top FBI counterterrorism officials questioned last summer explain the web of relationships of Osama bin Laden and his Al-Qaeda terrorist organization with other key fundamentalist figures and groups. According to testimony by John E. Lewis, another top counterterrorism official at the Bureau, it doesn't make any difference whether somebody from the Middle East or a white supremacist or from Australia, Lewis said, meaning that the Middle East terrorists rat out their brethren for the same reason Klansmen do, for money, revenge, and disenchantment with the cause. That the FBI American recruits spoke the Klan's language in Mississippi and understood its culture and politics was not seen as any kind of special advantage that's being lost in the battle against foreign terrorists. Upon further questioning, Lewis also admitted that he had no previous counterterrorism experience himself. Man, oh man, and these are the people. You know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with these particular people, but these are the people that are protecting us against terrorism, and they don't even know any of the nuances about these groups. Man, that's really kind of hard to understand. It really is. I'm not sure I understand how that can be. I really don't know how that can be. And, of course, Gene, one of our friends up in Oregon. Gene sent me quite a few good articles lately. And, oh, before I get to that, I want to congratulate one of my friends up in Ohio, Judy Armstrong, up in the Dayton area. She might be listening at the Sheriff's Department today. No, she's not in jail. She works at the jail. She is good and tired today, along with everybody up there that worked in Democrat Stephanie Studebaker's primary campaign, and they won, and they are happy as can be today. So, Judy, congratulations to all of you and your fellow campaign workers. I know you worked hard throughout that campaign getting Stephanie Studebaker through the primary, and now we'll get ready for the general election, and I'll bet you win that one as well if you work just as hard as you did in this one. So congratulations to all you folks that worked in the Stephanie Studebaker campaign, and especially Judy Armstrong for letting us know. She's kept us. We wanted to have Stephanie on the program earlier this week, but we had those technical difficulties, which kind of nixed the whole deal on that. But very proud of you. Very proud of what you folks have done up there. Gene in Oregon sent me this story about Benny Hinn, one of my favorites. He was going to go to Trinidad, and a Trinidadian group urges blocking visit of Texas televangelist. Yes, they want to keep Benny Hinn out of their country. Can you imagine that? They say it might cause a religious uprising in Trinidad. He's controversial. Very controversial. He's one of those healers, you know, and he raises more than $100 million a year and travels all over the world with his miracle crusades and stadiums, and he claims to heal the sick and you know how that goes. I actually thought he was based in Florida. I didn't know he was this in Dallas, Texas. A lot of those scoundrels are here in Florida. Yeah, so they wanted to keep old Benny Hinn out of Trinidad. And isn't that a doggone shame? Nice guy like Benny Hinn. Don't want him to get up there and preach. Well. Hey, we're going to pause for the news right now. We'll be back after the news. We're going to have Brad Friedman on very shortly after the news, so don't go away.
He flashed a V for victory sign and declared, "God save Osama bin Laden, you will never get him." He will serve his sentence in a maximum security prison in Colorado. In Washington, the Senate passed a $109 billion spending bill to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and Hurricane Katrina relief. The emergency spending bill has grown by $14 billion. President Bush has threatened to veto it unless it is brought back down to its original amount. In Iraq today, a female suicide bomber attacked a crowd, killing 10 Iraqis and wounding dozens. Also today, two U.S. soldiers were killed by a roadside bomb in Baghdad. Also in Iraq today, the U.S. military released previously unseen video of al-Qaeda's leader in Iraq. It was discovered in recent raids of safe houses. U.S. military officials say they may be close to capturing him after this discovery. On a visit to Eastern Europe, Vice President Dick Cheney made some harsh comments about Russia, accusing it of backsliding on democracy and bullying its neighbors with its vast energy supplies. Russian officials dismissed Cheney's remarks as, quote, completely incomprehensible. In Israel, the new parliament approved Prime Minister Ehud Olmert's new coalition government. In a speech, he expressed serious concern over Iran's developing nuclear program, which he says targets the Jewish state for annihilation. In Washington, the White House has turned down the idea of one-on-one talks with Iran aimed at curbing their uranium enrichment program. The United States is backing a French and British resolution introduced yesterday in the United Nations that would force Iran to halt their budding nuclear program or else face sanctions. In Mexico, President Vicente Fox has flip-flopped due to international pressure and now opposes a bill that would have decriminalized small amounts of drugs for personal use. A day after he said he would sign the bill, he is now demanding changes to it. In New Orleans, the city's hotels have announced that they will not offer shelter to guests and employees in the event of another major hurricane. In the past, the hotels were used as a haven for evacuees. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The government reports that U.S. consumer spending and income went up more in March than economists had expected. However, there is still caution that inflation may be just around the corner. The Labor Department says that new claims for jobless aid last week went up unexpectedly by 5,000. First-time claims rose to 322,000, the highest number since mid-November. Retailers are reporting the strongest April sales in 2 years. Sales were boosted by warm weather and a later-than-usual Easter. 30-year mortgage rates went up this week to their highest point in nearly 4 years. Freddie Mac reports the rate average is now 6.59%. Eastman Kodak announced its sixth straight quarterly loss. The world's largest photography company blames the difficult transition to digital photography. In New York, auction house Sotheby's says a Picasso portrait has sold for more than $95 million. That amount is the second highest ever paid for a painting at auction. The buyer remains anonymous. Royal Dutch Shell says its first quarter net profit rose to more than $6 billion. The oil company says rising oil prices made up for decreased production. Light sweet crude settled at $69.94 a barrel today. And near the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones is up 39 points, the Nasdaq up 20 points, the S&P 500 up 4. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
God bless America.
That's the only thing we have to say.
not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Ah, yes. Welcome back. Glad to have you back with us after the news is over. And as promised, let me see here if I push all the buttons right. As promised, we've got Brad Friedman with us. Do we not? Brad, are you with us?
We do. Hey, Guy, how are you?
Hey, I'm great, and I know you've probably had a busy day yesterday and today checking around the country to find out just what kind of results we had in the primaries and what problems, if any, we had with the black box voting machines and voting irregularities and so forth around the nation. What's your report? What all in all, how'd it go?
Problems, if any, Guy, you win the Understatement of the Year award.
I always like to say that with tongue-in-cheek.
Yes. We have had problems aplenty, and they continue to be revealed. We've got right now, you'll see if you stop by bradblog.com, loads of reports, one after another, about problems that we're having with, of course, the Diebold Company as well as ES&S. Those are the two major manufacturers of electronic voting machines.
Brad, can I interrupt you one second?
Yeah.
Diebold, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
They also make the lion's share of the ATM machines around the country, right?
They do indeed.
And you know a lot of people go to those machines. I know a lot of people go to those machines. I go to those machines now and then, and I must tell you, that I know of not one time that myself or my friends have ever had a problem with any of those machines getting the right amount of money out of them. So yes. I just wanted you to know that.
Yes, it seems they do very well when there are reliable paper trails like cash
uh-huh.
come out. And on those machines, they seem to do very well. Because they're held to a hell of a lot stricter standards, I guess, in the banking business than they apparently are in the democracy business, for which there is nobody, and I mean nobody, minding the ship.
So we know they can do well when they have to do well.
Not only do we know that they can do well, we know that they had been, prior to entering the election machine business, a very solid company for about 150 years. They actually made their name in the Chicago Fire of, I think it was 1870, the Great Chicago Fire, when really the only thing left standing was papers that were stored in Diebold security safes. So, you know, they held up very well to fire. They actually create the National Archives. They create the security system that protects the U.S. Constitution out in D.C., but when it comes to democracy, they don't seem to give much of a damn about security, and their unfortunately, their software shows it.
How very odd.
Mm-hmm. Now, what we have most recently, try to bring you quickly up to date here, because I know we don't have much time.
We have as much time as you need.
Thank you, sir. In Pennsylvania, we're just now getting word that the Secretary of State has issued a sudden security alert to all the counties that use Diebold. We believe it's the touchscreen machines. Diebold also makes optical scan machines. In either case, both of them have been proven recently to be hackable and have also revealed a myriad of other problems. Pennsylvania has their elections beginning May 16th. Actually, I think early voting begins sooner. But county officials have been warned essentially to lock down their machines while Diebold creates a fix for the software. Some might suggest it's fixed already.
A fix.
But that said, they are to be sending out software patches to Pennsylvania don't know if they plan to send them to other states and counties around the country who have those same machines or not. It tends to be such that problems show up in a certain area, and then whether it's Diebold or ESNS, they don't seem to bother to inform the rest of their customers about the same problems that they might have. In fact, in Pennsylvania, we're trying to figure out what the exact problem is, but it may be based on information that was learned in a recent study out in Utah, at least sources are telling us, concerning a security analysis that was done out there in Emery County, Utah, which revealed a host of problems, as well as a security analysis that happened down in Leon County, Florida, at the end of the year, which revealed that Diebold's optical scan machines are hackable. So, not sure what the exact information is that's forcing Pennsylvania to lock down the systems. And then another question has arisen. If Diebold is sending over patched software at this time to install on those machines, will that software, will there even be time to send that software to the federal authorities, federal and state authorities, to certify this software before it's given to Pennsylvania prior to the election? We know that there is a monumental problem at the federal level with the certification of this software. It's done by what's called the ITA, Independent Testing Authorities. Unfortunately, it's made up of three companies which are neither independent, nor do they test very well, nor are they particularly authoritative. They look only at what the voting machine companies tell them to look at, and as it turns out, the ITA missed a huge security flaw in Diebold software that exists on, as I say, both their optical scan and touchscreen machines, a huge security flaw that allows those machines to be hacked via their memory cards without a trace being left behind. That software that was not found, I'm sorry, the code that was not found by the federal authorities has apparently been in the software for years, but I guess Diebold hasn't pointed it out to them, so they didn't notice it, and in fact, that type of software is banned by the federal voting system standards, yet it is in currently all Diebold voting machines around the country. That's just one of the serious problems we had last Tuesday in elections on Tuesday in several states. Massive failures by Diebold, including in Cuyahoga County, Ohio, where I understand they are still counting thousands of votes by hand after the Diebold optical scanners failed to be able to scan the absentee ballots, something like 17,000 absentee ballots that the optical scanner simply would not read. Add that to machine breakdowns, machines that would not start up, paper jams, all kinds of messes in Cuyahoga County, Ohio. And then up in Michigan, it's revealed that the optical scan machines up there, the Diebold optical scan machines, have reported all sorts of candidates receiving zero votes. Every bond measure in one particular township, every bond measure received zero yes votes when the optical scanner printed out its final report. It sounded a lot like that hack that was done down in Leon County, Florida, I mentioned. These are just some of the meltdowns going on for Diebold, and we haven't even discussed ESNS yet, their evil twin company.
Brad, are these Diebold machines infinitely more technical and involved than say the bank machines that we spoke of?
I don't know that they are. No, not necessarily. Essentially, it could be argued that they're even simpler because all a voting machine really needs to do is add one to one.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it doesn't really take a genius. What it takes is somebody giving a damn about security. It takes someone willing to open their system up, since this is our public voting system. It requires opening that system up so that independent authorities can look at it, and when they find problems, let the company know so the software can be changed. Such as it is now, however, all of these companies, Diebold, ESNS, Hart InterCivic, on Sequoia, on down the line, go to tremendous lengths to protect their software to keep anybody from being able to analyze it and look at it. And in the meantime, they are taking billions of federal taxpayer dollars to run these, to privatize these public elections, and yet they seem to be absolutely accountable to nobody.
And yet their excuse is the secrecy is strictly for proprietary reasons to keep their industry secrets amongst themselves.
Yeah, something like that, yes. The competition between the vendors or something like that. But, you know, this is the very root of our democracy. This is the vote. And this is certainly not the time for, you know, corporate competition, you know, that weakens the confidence of the electorate in the system. And that's what we have now. We've got a confidence crisis in our electoral system, at least amongst those people who are paying attention. And I do not count the national media amongst those people who are paying attention. They're, you know, seem more interested in, you know, Duke lacrosse teams and Natalie Holloway.
Oh, yeah, much more so.
Than they do in the very core of our democracy, which, I repeat, is melting down.
Yeah.
It's a train wreck in progress. And while it's being reported locally, all across the country, they're reporting it as if it's a local story, as if it's only happening in that particular county or state. It is happening absolutely everywhere across all 50 states. At bradblog.com, we're trying to connect those dots to make people understand that. But unfortunately, the national media is still, months, if not years, behind in getting into this game and doing their job of alerting the American people to what the hell is going on with their electoral system.
Well, now, Brad, I know you've been seriously involved in this for a long time now, and I know you must certainly have made some attempts to try and get to the mainstream media with these stories. I know you have.
Yeah.
What do they tell you?
Well, it's changed over time. I don't hear a lot back from them now. For a while, I was hearing, you know, that some reporters were interested in covering them, but at the editorial level, at, you know, their editors and so forth and their producers for the broadcast media, for whatever reason, were shying away from the stories. They considered them to be, I guess, critical of the administration, critical of Republicans, because it was Republican companies in general that are running these corporations, and they regarded it for a long time as conspiracy theory. Now, the reporting that I do at BradBlog is based on hard, demonstrable evidence. I always source everything and tell you exactly where I get it from, whether it's news reports or public documents. What I hear now is a gaping silence from them. I can't tell you why at this point they are not covering it. Now, that said, I do know that there are a couple of major media outlets who are about to who are working at least on two very major stories in this tale. One, a print magazine outlet. Another, a broadcast outlet. I know that broadcast outlet has been working for some time, has a very impressive story put together, and unfortunately is facing roadblocks from attorneys from this particular company. That is very troubling. I don't know if that report is ever going to make it to air at this time or not, but I do have a little bit more confidence in the magazine story, which I believe will soon come out, and I hope it will get a lot of people to notice what the hell is going on here.
Well, one might understand if you're going to be nonpartisan and stand over in the corner and take a good hard look at this thing. One might understand as a news director or a publisher or a producer of a show where this story might look partisan, since it and correct me if I'm wrong. Since the beneficiary of most of these big mistakes that we do know of and can document, the beneficiaries of most of these have been those of a certain political persuasion.
Well, that had been true to a certain extent, but the fact of the matter is this is a completely nonpartisan problem, and in fact, finally, we're seeing Republicans get into the act and realize the danger posed by having private corporations run our public elections. Recently, down in Texas, a Republican Supreme Court justice challenged the results of the primary down there that was carried out on Hart InterCivic and ES&S machines after in the Republican primary, when it was revealed that 100,000 extra votes were added in Fort Worth, another county that this Republican Supreme Court justice had won, Winkler County in Texas. He had won that county in 2002 by 75%. He lost. He won it in 2004 by 65%, and this year he lost it by 100%. He received zero votes. That has suddenly woken up Republicans down there. Meanwhile, up in Illinois, the so-called blue state of Illinois, where the voting systems are run by Sequoia voting systems, they had massive problems in their recent primary, which has led some right-wingers to suddenly take a closer look and realize that Sequoia was recently purchased by a Venezuelan company that seems to have close ties perhaps to Hugo Chavez. Now, all of a sudden, they're up in arms that, oh, my gosh, Hugo Chavez is controlling American elections. Well, good. I'm glad they're concerned. It would have been nice if they were similarly concerned when other private companies with clear political leanings were, you know, controlling companies such as Diebold and ES&S.
I agree. I am glad this is happening. The more people from all sides that get involved in this, the better it's going to be for everyone.
And listen, let me add, the Democrats have been woefully delinquent in dealing with this issue, despite the fact that they are most frequently affected by it, it seems. But in many cases, you know, in Georgia and Maryland, the two Diebold showcase states, it was by and large Democrats. Kathy Cox, Secretary of State down there in Georgia, and Linda Lamone, the election director up there in Maryland, who were big proponents of these Diebold touchscreen systems. And in fact, in those states, they brought in paperless Diebold touchscreen systems. And recently, the Republican governor, Bob Ehrlich, in Maryland, has come out and announced that he has absolutely no confidence in these paperless Diebold machines to carry off an election in 2006. And now he's a Republican, and the Democratic majority state house there voted 167-0 to ban these machines in Maryland. So this is, you know, it's really not, as I say very frequently, this is not an issue of right and left. This is an issue of right and wrong, period.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I see in Ohio that our friend Mr. Blackwell is involved in this once again. Of course, he would be as Secretary of State. I guess in his, he put some sort of a hold on this up in Cuyahoga County.
I'm trying to keep up with you know, the things as they're breaking. I'm not sure what his involvement so far has been in Cuyahoga County, but I know that in Cuyahoga County they had, as I said, all sorts of breakdowns, problems on Election Day, and one of the other problems that has been revealed, and this also occurred in the Illinois primary. Some 70 memory cards have gone completely missing. A memory card, that's what is actually slipped into each of these machines, and it tallies the votes as well as it does other things. And if these voting cards or these memory cards are gone, how do you count your election? Now, you can say that this could have happened if we had paper ballots as well. Well, sure. But these memory cards, which may store, you know, 500 votes or something per machine, it's a hell of a lot more difficult to make 500 paper ballots disappear than it is to make a single credit card-sized memory card disappear. And that's what we're talking about when we're dealing with these electronic voting machines. Some 70 of them were missing as of yesterday. in Cuyahoga County, and after the Illinois election, over 400 of these memory cards went missing.
Well, see, Bennett, the election board chairman up in Cuyahoga County, gave Diebold an F. And I don't know as if he's the chairman, if he had anything to do with bringing Diebold in or not, or if that was strictly a Blackwell situation.
Well, he did. They were given the choice between Diebold and ES&S Systems. They had no choice but to take, I believe, one or the other. Bob Bennett, gave them an F. Michael Vu, the election director down there, said he said that this was unacceptable. Now, mind you, I had spoken with Michael Vu at length last December about this after they had accepted these Diebold machines to come into their county. And he's a Democrat, Michael Vu, but he had confidence in these machines, and he actually said to me, and I had been meaning to follow it up and never got to, but he actually said to me, this was, I believe, mid-December, hey, if those Diebold machines are good enough for Ion Sancho, they're good enough for me. Now, Ion Sancho is that election director down there in Leon County, Florida, who has been very outspoken about all of these security issues for quite some time. He was central in the 2000 election recount down in Florida. And he, at the time, had been going with Diebold. Just a few days later, he had allowed security analyst down there, to perform a hack that they contended they could do. They were able to flip the vote without a trace being left behind, after which Ion said he would never use Diebold in another election again. So I had hoped to call Michael Vu back and say, are you still standing by these machines now that Ion Sancho is not?
Right.
I never got a chance to do that. But at the time, he was not particularly concerned about the security issues on these electronic machines. But yesterday, he was singing a different tune, saying that the performance by Diebold and by these machines was completely unacceptable.
These guys can't like you a whole lot.
They don't care for me, and I don't know why. I'm a very nice guy, Jim.
Well, I think there's one guy that's a little bit more upset than you, or they are, or anybody. There was a boy up in Cleveland, I think a 61-year-old man, as I recall, who destroyed a couple Diebold machines just because he was frustrated he couldn't get them to work right.
Yeah, and I haven't gotten too many more details on that, but, yeah, he sort of went postal and raged against the machine, as they say, and destroyed a couple of those touchscreen machines, went crazy, had to be arrested. I can't advocate that sort of thing, and I would never advocate that sort of thing, but, you know, look, I understand. I understand what people are going through.
Oh, hey, let me tell you, during the last general election,
yeah,
I'm doing a Democratic liberal talk show in the heart of darkness here, redder than red as can be.
Yeah,
and I go down to, and I'm very careful about registering to vote and all this. I'm very, very, very careful about that. I go down to the polls, which isn't 400 yards from where I live. Walk in, and they say, I'm sorry, we don't have you registered. I said, well, no, wait a minute. Of course you have me registered. Here's my card. No, I'm sorry, these numbers don't jibe. And I spent the better part of the entire day having to get a hold of the local election board, whom by the head of which, by the way, on election day, was out of the office and not available on election day. So I understand the frustration. I finally did get to vote.
Yeah.
But after maybe 6-7 hours of frustration having to work with, so I understand this old boy getting real upset with these machines yesterday.
Oh yeah. What year was that you had those problems?
The last presidential election.
2004.
Yeah.
And what county was it?
Lee County, Florida.
And had you voted previously?
Yeah.
And suddenly you were no longer on the...
Suddenly no longer on the voting roll,
well,
yes.
Well, that's what's going on. That's the next wave of all of this, frankly, and I'm having trouble keeping up. But
and I'm not an ex-felon, by the way.
Okay, good to know. But, yeah, that's what's going on. That is the next wave, and while some folks are just kept catching up to the dangers of this electronic voting, the black boxes themselves, The bad guys, I'm afraid, are well ahead of us, and they are now gaming the registration systems like you wouldn't believe, and well, or you might believe it because it affected you. But that is one of the reasons why thousands and thousands of folks turned up in 04 in Ohio, where they had been voting for, you know, decades, and found that they were no longer on the poll on the poll books. Same thing that you found. It's now happening out here in California, where it was recently announced that 43% of new registered voters in Los Angeles County after January 1 have been rejected from the poll books entirely, and 23% statewide, because they're using this ridiculous exact matching technology. So, you know, if I have my name in there registered as Brad Friedman, but on my driver's license I've got Bradley Friedman, I will be rejected because that's not an exact match.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, or if you live at Jones Road and you write it R-O-A-D and on your registration, but on your driver's license you say R-D period, you will be rejected from the system. It's unbelievable.
Well, as you well know, I'm sure, and I don't, to my knowledge, it hasn't been straightened out here in Florida yet. They had, I don't know, I'm thinking the numbers around 55,000 ex-felons taken from the rolls, and it involved a lot of people who actually weren't felons. The names were mismatched and so forth. And as of the last election, I believe Jeb Bush filed some sort of a hardship cause with the Federal Election Board, and so those people didn't get to vote again the last election.
Yeah, and that was originally discovered back in 2000 that they were purging these felons, but they were doing so, you know, just almost randomly. If your name sounded like somebody else, they were just removing you from the polls. They promised to not do it in 2004. They got caught doing it anyway, promised to undo it, but I don't know that they did. And, you know, there are no federal authorities. Nobody is minding the store. There is no federal authorities overseeing what's going on and holding these people accountable. And, in fact, the Department of Justice, in many cases, has been encouraging this behavior through various means and through various things that they've done to essentially gut the Voting Rights Act and overlook all of the problems that are going on. The Elections Assistance Commission that was formed by the Help America Vote Act hasn't been funded or completely underfunded. They are toothless. They are unable to do anything. And add to that the fact that both the politicians and the media themselves are similarly not doing anything. So it's being left to, frankly, citizen patriots all around the country to raise hell, to raise awareness about what's going on, to try everything they can to hold these officials accountable, whether it's asking them tough questions at public hearings, making public records requests, filing lawsuits, blogging about it, doing whatever we can to raise awareness of it, because we are the only ones doing it, and it's only democracy at stake.
That's all. I could swear I heard you say Department of Justice. I didn't know we had one of those anymore.
Yeah.
I thought they'd pretty much given up the ship. I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go from here. Now that it has crossed party lines, like you said, I would hope. You know, it's just not one of those sexy issues to your high-profile people in Congress. You know, those are the ones you got to get your John Kerry's, you got to get your Hillary Clinton's, those type of people to speak out about an issue like this for it to gain traction. And I don't hear it from any of those folks.
No, and in fact, because John Kerry rolled over on November 3rd, 2004, that was one of the reasons that I heard for a long time from many folks in the media saying, well, if John Kerry didn't care to challenge it, and he had the most to lose, why should we bother? After which I always have to, you know, I sort of get furious and say, pardon me, but John Kerry didn't have the most to lose. America,
exactly.
The voters had the most
exactly.
to lose. The voters who had, you know, probably preferred that this guy become the president, they are the ones who lost, not John Kerry. This isn't the sporting event. This isn't a boxing match. You know, this is democracy. This was never about John Kerry or George W. Bush. This was about the American people. And they need to, the media needs to figure that out, and they need to figure out that they are working for us, that they are the fourth estate, that they are the watchdogs for the citizenry, not the public relations bureau for these politicians of either party. They work for us. They need to get their act together.
And you know, Brad, the sad part about it is no matter who wins, let's take the next couple of presidential elections, for example, and they'll be close. There won't be any runaways anytime soon in a presidential election, I don't think. But no matter who loses, it doesn't matter. If the Republicans or Democrats lose, there's going to be charges of an unjust an election that was involved corruption. That's why, you know, nobody's ever going to have faith in it again. Nobody from either side.
Well, the mark of a successful election is when the loser walks away and recognizes the validity of that election. We haven't had that occur in a long time here. And now, unfortunately, I can tell you what I can predict what's going to happen this fall. If the Democrats do well, the Republicans will start yelling and screaming, but probably not about the machines themselves. They've got this phony issue of voter fraud, which is distinct from election fraud. They've got this notion that there are an invisible army of millions of dead people voting at the polls, and that's why we're having this gaming, frankly, of the registration system that you talked about. Fact of the matter is there is no voter fraud epidemic in this country. That is a phony issue, and that is currently being played out and paid for, mind you, by very high-level operatives in the Republican Party to go all around the country and give this impression that we've got a voter fraud problem. And what they're trying to do is force states to implement photo ID restrictions at the polls, which will just coincidentally end up disenfranchising millions of American voters who happen to be Democratic-leaning folks from the inner cities, minorities, the elderly, folks who don't have driver's license. And all of a sudden, they're not going to be allowed to vote because they don't have a photo license.
Yeah.
I mean, it is it's Jim Crow laws at its worst. They're using it to game the system. And that's where, I promise you, that is where they will be if the Democrats end up having any kind of decent gains this November. That's a big if, given that it is Republican companies that control these voting machines. And if the Democrats don't do as well as they should, then you're going to hear rightly a lot of folks like me, you know, saying, well, it is because we have no confidence in these systems because we have no clue how they work. They use secret software that is not reliable, that is checked by no one, and in the bargain, we have lost our open, free, fair, and transparent electoral system that used to be the mark of this at least once great democracy.
That's right. Brad, we've got to run. I thank you for taking the extra time to talk to us about this today. It's an issue that's, well, we can't emphasize how important it is. I hope to have you back from time to time to talk about it.
There are so few people really covering what's going on here. I do my best whenever anyone asks me to come on and make noise about it to do exactly that. So please, touch base anytime, last minute, anything else. This is a full-blown crisis right now in our democracy, and we need folks like you to help get the word out wherever we can.
That it is. Brad Friedman, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guy.
Well, there you have it. one more time. It happened. We had a gentleman up in Cuyahoga County. That's Cleveland, Ohio, for those of you who don't know. That got so upset about this yesterday that he actually got mad and went crazy and destroyed a couple of those Diebold machines. Ohio's pretty interesting right now. Let's leave aside any of the black box voting issues that may have happened there. Ohio is once again going to be a bellwether state, I think, and come the next election, maybe even this 2006 election. Ken Blackwell, whom I have, well, I'll just say it. I mean, I always say what I think on this program. It gets me in trouble sometime. I think he's probably held in the lowest esteem a man could be held in for me, for my personal opinion. The man invented the word political shenanigans. The last election had his thumb on the control of these voting machines, had his thumb on the control of the results in Ohio. There is no question in my mind, none whatsoever, that John Kerry probably won Ohio in the last election, and I mean none. And here we have the man that was deeply involved in this, the Secretary of State of the State of Ohio, Ken Blackwell, now running for governor against Ted Strickland. It appears to me that at this time, anyway, Blackwell's fresh off of a primary victory yesterday, a pretty good victory. I think he won by, I don't know, some 12, 13 points. So I could be wrong on that. But an easy primary victory. Now he's going to face Ted Strickland. Ted Strickland is a savvy politician. Ted Strickland's a good politician. Ted Strickland is a man who has a clean record. He is a man who is going to be well-funded. Perhaps not as well-funded as Ken Blackwell in Ohio. But you can bet that the Republicans, the money will come pouring in. They are desperate for Blackwell to take that state. And let me tell you a couple of reasons why. Number one, Ken Blackwell is a black man, and they want to capture some of the black vote in Ohio and hope that will carry over to the general election and help keep the Republicans in power. They hope that Ken Blackwell, being a black man, will capture some of the Cuyahoga County, that's Cleveland, vote and help the Republicans carry Ohio in the next presidential election. They want Ken Blackwell to be governor of Ohio, and they will pour any amount of money necessary in there to get that governorship for him. I don't see it happening. I really don't see it happening, although there are some amazing things that happen now and then. I spoke to someone whom I have the utmost respect for earlier today that lives in a, let me say it, a lily white county in Ohio. Not 100%, but pretty close. That said that Ken Blackwell came there and spoke, I believe, at the courthouse, on the courthouse lawn very, very recently, and gathered quite a crowd, which, to me, in this particular county, and I'm not going to say which it is, but surprised me very, very much. Surprised me that even a bunch of Republicans would come out in this particular county to see Ken Blackwell. Now, the other problem is, Ohio is coming off how many years now? 8 years of the leadership of Bob Taft as governor of Ohio, one of the most, and I hate to overuse the word, but I am talking about Republicans after all, one of the most corrupt governors of a state that you can possibly imagine. You'd have to go down to Louisiana, perhaps, Governor Edwin Edwards a while back, to find a governor as corrupt as Bob Taft. Maybe a Spiro Agnew in Maryland, I don't know. But Bob Taft has been a corrupt governor in Ohio. He's been an incompetent. His level of incompetency as the governor of the great state of Ohio, and Ohio is a great state, a multifaceted state, with an industrial state, a farming state, a high-tech state, a wonderful place. Ohio is really four different states. It really is. A wonderful agricultural section to it. It's got your high-tech section to it. It's got your urban area. It's just four different states. Your southeast, which is kind of Appalachian. A very diverse place Ohio is, and a wonderful, beautiful state. And I'll always love Ohio. Was born and raised in Ohio, but it's been under the leadership of a guy, of Bob Taft, of the Taft machine. They came out of Cincinnati. They owned the Taft Broadcasting Company, and of course they had the Supreme Court Justice and President Taft. And so the Tafts have wielded much power in the state of Ohio politically over the years. And here they have this recent one, Bob Taft, probably the dumbest one of the Tafts to ever come along. A guy without a clue. A guy so out of touch with reality in political affairs in the state of Ohio that even his own party, I know, if he could come up for re-election this time, I think the Republicans would run somebody in the primary against him and get him booted out. You can be sure of that. The Republican establishment in the state of Ohio is heaving a big sigh of relief that Bob Taft is finally leaving. Thank God that he's going to be out of there. That's what the Republican hierarchy in the state of Ohio is saying. And so along comes Ken Blackwell, and he's going to be the fair-haired boy that they're going to push right now. He's got a lot of money behind him. He's got the evangelical community behind him. He has this outrageous charlatan preacher by the name of Rob Parsley, whom my personal opinion of the guy is, he's, well, you put Benny Hinn and him together and shake them up, and you don't know which one's going to come out. I mean, that's just how it is. Rod Parsley, head of a huge non-denominational church just outside of Columbus. I don't know. They've got something like 9,000 members. Has access to or owns a jet, private jet that flies Blackwell around to political events. And Parsley's been going around and speaking in events all around Ohio, praising Blackwell and his abilities and the fact that he's a good Christian man. Notice how they keep bringing that out, that Blackwell is a good Christian man, and that's the reason you ought to elect him governor of Ohio. These things bother me. They really do. And as long as the evangelical community are willing to accept second-class politicians who claim to be righteous Christian men, first and foremost, no matter how inept or incompetent or corrupt they are, as long as they claim to be righteous Christians, the evangelical community is going to put them in office. And until that particular community comes down off of that stance, there's going to be a problem. You would think sooner or later, hopefully sooner, the parishioners of a church, I don't know what it's called, the World Harvest Church, something like that, of Rod Parsley, and you ought to check into his background. Please do. You would think the parishioners that go to a church like that would sooner or later say, wait a minute. Wait just a minute, Reverend Parsley. I'm a man who can think for myself. And I happen to know that Blackwell's got a lot of things going against him. And I happen to know that him coming to this church and claiming that he's a Christian is not the most important thing, not the most important criteria for a man to be governor of the state of Ohio. I hope the people in the evangelical community will, at this time, at this very important time in our nation's history, come to their senses and understand that they've been used like a bunch of schmucks by the Republican Party. Yes, exactly that. Suckers. P.T. Barnum said there's been one more born every minute. There was millions of them born. Or reborn, I guess you could say. And don't get me wrong what I'm saying here. I'm not saying anything whatsoever against born-again Christians. That is not what my message is at this moment. My message is that these pastors who wield a great deal of power and influence in their churches, many of these big mega churches like this Rod Parsley has, almost to the point of a cult-like influence, can hold sway over the people in their parish and make them vote any way they want them to vote. Good old Jerry Falwell had a big seminar at Liberty Baptist college or university or whatever you call Liberty University, I guess they call it now. 13,000 ministers from across the country came to this. And you can understand that all 13,000 of them were right-wing ministers, with Falwell and his lawyers and fellow preachers giving lessons on how to get around the IRS, how to keep the separation of church and state and keep their tax-free advantages, exactly what to say and how to get away with it. This is wrong. This is wrong. I have told the story, and I will tell it again. But during the election, when John Kennedy was running for president, my family attended a certain church where my grandfather and his father before him had attended, and my father and our family and his brothers, and some of them still belong to this particular church. We went to church on Sunday, and the reverend got up when it was announced that Kennedy was the nominee and preached against John Kennedy instead of preaching the Word of God that Sunday. We went back the following Sunday and the same thing ensued. And in the following Sunday, the same thing about how the Pope was going to be running your life. Finally, one Sunday, the preacher got up and started it again. The week before the election, my father looked at my brother, my mother, and I, sitting approximately in the middle of the sanctuary of the church, and in a loud voice, my father looked at the other three of us and said, "Get up! We are leaving this church now, and we will never return." And we never did. Start going to another church. That is the proper attitude for every father in America. The moment the politics starts coming from the pulpit, that's the time to say, "Get up, we're leaving. We came here to learn about righteousness, to learn about the Bible, the Quran, whatever church you're going to, whatever faith you belong to." That is what that holy house is for. It is not for politics, nor do I condone Democrats doing the same thing. Most certainly I do not. There is no place for it. No place for it at all. But the thing the Republicans have not understood, and I started to say they're being used as a bunch of stupid schmucks by the Republicans, they're beating on these family values, they're beating on the anti-abortion, and that's all you hear. That's the main issue, the anti-abortion, anti-abortion, anti-abortion. That's what these right-wingers are preaching. That's what the Falwells and the Robertsons and the Dobsons I can't think of the other guy's name that I love so much. But that's what they're taught to teach. That's how they get the people mesmerized into voting for the right-wing candidates they want them to vote for. And those candidates have no intention whatsoever of doing anything about the issues that caused the evangelical people to vote for them. None. None. Those issues are straw men. They were used to make suckers out of these people to get them to vote for them. That's all they were used for. And here we are, lo, these many years later, and many of these people have been voting Republican to get the anti-abortion and the against gay marriage. They're going to beat that issue again to death again this year. And the Republican people who get elected have no intention, none, of making that an issue. They're merely taking advantage of these people, and some of these people have been taken advantage of for years and years and years, and in doing so have put their nation in peril, in serious peril, as we're now seeing, by putting a bunch of right-wing neocons who threaten the very security of the United States by occupying the offices they have in Washington, D.C. How can you live with yourself when you look at what has happened in this nation in the last 6 years? How can you look yourself in the mirror and say, I helped these people do this to our country. How can you do that without hanging your head in shame? I say again, it's got nothing to do with being a Republican or being a Democrat. It has to do with being American. That's what it has to do with. It has to do with being a good American. And sooner or later, if you're going to be a good American, you've got to take the one issue that these people are beating you with, or two issues, the abortion or the gay marriage or whatever it is, and put it aside. And decide that you're going to vote for America, or you're going to vote for one of those issues. You're going to vote for America for the common good, or you're going to be selfish enough to vote for one of those issues and fall into the stupid trap that so many people have fallen into over these last few elections. It's your choice. It's your duty to vote for what's best for this country. It's the most sacred, solemn duty you have as an American. And for someone to hijack your vote, to steal it away from you on false premises, without you even understanding why, it's unforgivable. That's why we do this program. We hear from a lot of people who have seen the light, who have understood that people have taken advantage of them for their vote and not produced, have not come through with what they said they would if you voted for them. Oh, it's happened on both sides of the aisle. Make no mistake about that. But it's, in particular, these last few elections, it's happened on the right side, the right-wing side, because they have used these wedge issues to get themselves elected so that they could grab the ultimate, the money and the power and the world domination that they're after right now. And those of you that went along with them, particularly those who of you who are still going along with them, you're just as guilty as they are. I hope that doesn't sound harsh. I guess I mean it harsh. Saw in the news a while ago that a guy paid $93 million for a Picasso painting. Now, I like Picasso. I do. And this was the second most money ever paid for a painting. I don't know how much number one is. And I got to thinking to myself, would I pay $93 million or $95 million, I guess it was, for a Picasso painting, if I had all the money? Well, if I had Bill Gates kind of money, would I pay? I don't think so. I don't think I would. I might buy a simpler, not-so-famous Bruegel the Elder painting for only a couple million and keep the other and keep the change, you know? I don't know. I guess you're discovering how exactly weird I really am. I am so glad that you've joined us for the program today. We've had a good audience today, and glad to have Brad Friedman. My thanks to him. We're going to keep close tabs on this black box voting issue. I welcome all your emails and questions about it and so forth. And I welcome all the correspondence from you folks. I want you to know I do my best to keep up with it. I can't keep up with all of it every day, but I try. Please do remember that this show is listener-supported. We need your help to keep it going. We really do. We don't stuff our pockets with money, as you probably well know, but it costs money to stream the program, pay the phone bill, and all that sort of thing, and we appreciate your help so very much with it. Hey, as always, you've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. Have a great day, everybody.